Accession number 13724, reel 2.
Captain Lowell, reel 2.
On our nights off when we weren't flying, which is normally caused through bad weather conditions, we used to go into Lincoln, especially the Saracen's Head, where most of the pilots and air crew used to meet, and have a congenial evening there.
Was there any rowdyism?
Oh, yes, there was lots of rowdyism, but it was all done in a pleasant nature. Remember, these chaps had to let off steam somehow. And they were encouraged to let off steam, to try and forget about the flying for one night.
But did they break things and
no,
get into punch-ups?
No, they didn't get it. Well, there might have been, I didn't see any punch-ups. I've no doubt there were some. But no, it was just a jolly evening.
Well, that doesn't sound particularly like rowdyism.
No, it wasn't rowdyism. It was just the chaps were so pleased to have an evening off and all meet together with their girlfriends that we all had an enjoyable evening. There was no roaring drunkenness or anything like that. We all drank beer. We didn't drink any spirits in those days. And we just had a very enjoyable time.
Did you get impatient with the equipment which you had in the squadron?
Well, you see, the Hampden, the Handley Page Hampden, was a very odd aircraft. It had this awful stabilized yaw, which wasn't discovered till later, and without going technical, what it meant was that if you were flying at a certain speed, which happened to be 125 knots, and you held off the rudder with your undercarriage down, that is the sort of position you'd be in coming in to land, you went into a stabilized yaw, in other words, into a flat spin, unless you were very, very experienced and you had the height. And if you were coming into land, you were normally at about 1,500 feet when you put your undercarriage down. You hadn't got a hope in hell. You just went into a flat spin, hit the ground and burst into flames, and that was that. And they didn't discover this, what they termed stabilized yaw, which was discovered by the test pilots at Boscombe Down, the experimental base, until some time later. But unfortunately, on the shape of the Handley Page Hampden, it was impossible to cure. So the answer was that 125 knots with your undercarriage down, you didn't put on rudder and hold off bank, because if you did, you were in trouble.
But as a squadron leader, were you continually asking group for a better bombing machine?
No, we were perfectly happy with the Hampden. There wasn't a better bombing machine until the Manchester came in, which was an absolute disaster. And a lot of pilots were killed in the Manchester because of the two engines, which were completely useless. And in desperation, Bomber Harris, who was our AOC, our officer commanding, he stopped the Manchester flying, said it was no bloody good for operations. And the makers came along, Avros, and they said, ah, but we've got an idea, we'll take out these two engines and we'll put four engines into it, Merlin, Rolls-Royce Merlin engines. And what do you think? It turned into the Lancaster, the finest bomber of the war, a war winner.
But But whilst you were with 144, you had Hamdens all the time.
Hamdens the whole time. Then I had a terrible experience on September the 7th, 1940. I was briefed in the morning to select four crews to fly to Stettin. Well, I didn't know where Stettin was, and so we saw the intelligence maps, and Stettin, for your interest, is in Poland. And at the briefing, I said, look, we cannot get to Stettin and back with our fuel endurance. And we were brightly told, we've worked that one out, but you'll get very close to the UK coast, the English coast, and don't worry, there'll be ships and boats out if you go into the sea, which wasn't a consolation. And anyhow, we're going to fly you to IAF Marham, which is in Norfolk, which was slightly shorter. And if the winds are right, we reckon you can make England on the return journey, which wasn't very helpful. So I selected four pilots who were going to go on this, and I decided to go on it myself as the flight commander. And by then, I had a new crew, because my second pilot had been turned into a captain, and who was incidentally killed on his first trip. He never came back. He was shot down. But nevertheless, to go back to the story, we flew back down to Marham in Norfolk and took off for Stettin. And we flew for about 4.5 hours and got there. At least we think it was Stettin, but one cannot guarantee that. It was a city on the borders of Germany and Poland. I like to think it was Stettin, but I can't guarantee it. But on the way back, I told this young navigator to let me know when we were over the North Sea again, because the fuel was getting very slow, I wanted to get down as we were flying into a headwind, to get down as low as possible. And after about an hour and a half, he said, right, we're over the North Sea. And so I let down to 8,000 feet. And with that, about 15 searchlights suddenly coned me, and all the flak came up. We've never seen anything like it. We were over the middle of Hamburg. And the aircraft again was hit by flak. I found the controls. I didn't know what damage had been done to the aircraft. But the rear gunner, he'd been killed, according to the wireless operator. And I found it extremely difficult to fly, because I was flying on using the engines, as the rudder appeared to be fairly useless. So I then had to make a decision, and I made the decision that we somehow got out of Hamburg, and to the crew I said, you've got the option. This aircraft is fairly uncontrollable, but I'm going to try and make England, but you've got the option of bailing out over Germany. And they decided they would stay in the aircraft and try and make England. Well, it was raining, terrible weather conditions, and finally we hit the English coast. And here I made one of the greatest, well, the biggest mistake of my life. I told the crew that they had to bail out. I wanted them to bail out, and I was going to try and land the aircraft somehow, but the controls were very limited, with hardly any rudder control, and it was raining, and it was a terrible, dark, nasty night, and the crew said they would prefer to stay and land in the aircraft. And so I was looking out. I made the wrong decision. Instead of ordering them to bail out, I fell for it and said, okay, will you stay and I'll land the aircraft. And so we got to an airfield, Bertram Newton. And when I got there, I called them up on the TR-9, which is a pretty useless radio link, didn't work awfully well, and explained my situation and said, look, I can only make one pass at this airfield. I'm fairly, very low on fuel, and I've got no proper rudder control. And will you put what absolute maximum lights you've got on for me to try and land? And they said, no, we can't put any lights on. There's a German night intruder in the district circling around here, and we're not putting any lights on. Go on to West Raynham. So I flew on to West Raynham, and when I got there, I said, please, emergency, give me every light you've got. I've only got about 10 minutes fuel left, and I've got limited control again. And they said, all right, we'll take a chance, or some words to that effect. We'll put the flare path out again, which they did. And I said, right, I'm making one pass to try and line the aircraft up, and I've got to land. And so they gave me a green to come in to land. And I got down to about 300 feet, and my port engine went. I suspect it was fuel. I thought we were out of fuel. And I then realized that we were going to go out of control, but I could just about hold it. And I got the aircraft up to 800 feet, and it was absolutely useless. I couldn't control it at all, and she went into a what one can only say an uncontrolled spin, and I saw this airfield coming up, which we'd missed, we'd gone over the top of, and I saw this field. It was just getting dawn coming up, and we hit the ground, and I don't remember anything else until I woke up in hospital a couple of days later, and I didn't know what happened, but I was found about 20 or 30 yards from the aircraft. I'd been thrown out miraculously somehow, and my chute had sort of semi-opened by the side of me, and that's how they found me. And unfortunately, the crew were all killed. Well, one was dead already, but the other two were killed in the crash. They never got... What happened? How I went out? I just don't know. It's just an absolute complete blank. But they found me and put me in hospital for a couple of days. And
what was the date of that?
That was September the 7th, 1940.
And the crash was at West Raynham?
West Raynham. somewhere around West Radom.
How long did it take you to recover?
I was out of hospital in a week, and I got back to my unit, 144 squad, and I was very, very shaken. Not so much the crash, because I couldn't remember about that, but what I was shaken was my crew being killed. And I decided then that immediately I got back, I had to fly. If I didn't fly then, I didn't think I'd ever fly again. And about a fortnight later, I did my first trip again. And once I was shaken until I got the aircraft into the air, and I had no problems after that, and went through, completed a bombing raid to Berlin, and had no trouble, and completed my 30 trips. So that was my first tour.
Any other incidents that happened to you whilst you were with 144?
Not really. I think those were the main ones. Hitting the balloon barrage was pretty frightening. Completely icing up and having no controls was equally frightening. And crashing like that, knowing that this was it. I can remember that, thinking, well, this is it. I mean, the trouble is, I had no controls. I couldn't do anything to control the aircraft. You see, the tail had obviously been damaged. And those are the three things that really I remember of my first tour. I had, during that time, on one raid, I had the aircraft damaged and had to crash land at Hemsville with no undercarriage, but the hydraulics had been shot away, and I just hit the flare path and bounced about 50 feet into the air and went clearing through a couple of fields, and no one was injured on that.
What condition were you in at the end of the tour?
At the end of the tour, I was quite all right. I was posted down as a flying instructor to an operational training unit where we were training the pilots, the night fly. And when I got there, it was IAF Upper Hayford. They had a permanent funeral party because they had a flare path lit at night, and one or two were going in literally on the takeoff, burning and being killed. It was terrible. And I was there only a short time because the group captain there, some pilots who only had very limited flying on Anson's and Hamden's were due to do their first night flight, and the wind was over the hangars and there were no runways then. And I, as the chief instructor, cancelled night flying for the night because I wasn't going to let these chaps go off at night. And this group captain, who shall be nameless, came tearing down the tarmac and said, "Who's cancelled night flying?" And I remember it as though it was yesterday. I said, "I have, sir." And he said, "Who knows more about night flying, you or me?" And I said, "Well, there's no question about that, it's me." And he put me under an open arrest. And we didn't get on very well after that, which he, in the morning, he said, "We're all very hasty over this, we've got to get these pilots off." And I said, you can get them off, but it's no good trying to get them to fly over the hangars at night, on their first solos at night. And so I asked to go to another squadron, and they posted me to a Blenheim squadron at Horsham St. Faith in Norwich.
This was 18?
Number 18 squadron.
Can you tell me about 18 squadron?
Yes.
And how
right.
It was different from 144?
That I was posted to Bristol, which was an airfield, which was an OTU for Blenheim aircraft. I flew twice in a Blenheim, and then one cross-country flight in a Blenheim, picked up a crew, fortunately a very experienced crew, a navigator and a gunner, and flew to Horsham St. Faith to 18 Squadron.
Which stage in 41 would this be about?
This was in July 1941. Now, let me think now. Oh, yes, I remember so well that the specialist job of two group in those days was to attack ships off the Dutch coast, which meant you flew at 20, 30 feet off the water with 400 500-pound bombs, or alternatively 250-pound bombs with a 10-second fuse on them, so that you flew straight at the ship, below the ship, and as you came to the ship, you pulled up over the mast, hoping not to hit them, dropping your 10-second delay bomb, which gave you time to get over the ship before the bomb exploded. Now, the casualty rate was, without exaggeration, appalling. The 70% of the air crew were shot down. I mean, it literally was. It should, in my humble opinion, should never have been allowed, because the losses were so great.
You mean 70% on each raid?
On each raid, yes. The losses were really quite appalling. Some, of course, the inexperienced ones hit the sea before they hit the ships, but most of them were shot down. The Germans had flak ships all around, you see, and they saw us coming, and they just fired point-blank range, and it literally was known as the suicide game.
Did you go out on them yourself?
Yes, indeed I did. And I went on three of them, and then we were told that we had been selected to go to Malta to do the same sort of job.
Before you go to Malta, can you describe what the three were like that you were in?
The three that I went on were the most, one of the most frightening things that I experienced. The first one, as I say, I only had about 5 hours on Blenheims, and I couldn't lead. I was the flight commander, but I couldn't lead because I had no experience of this type of bombing. All my bombing had been at night, or most of it had been at night. A sergeant pilot was leading it because he was experienced, and we went on this trip, and I said, well, what's the form? And he said, well, you'll see the ship. We know it's there because the Jim Crows, they were the boys that used to go out and find the ships for us, use the Spitfires. And you'll know when the ship has seen you because they'll fire a flare. And that will alert the flak ships all around so that they can start firing at you. And I found that at about 30 feet off the water was pretty dicey, but we flew straight at this ship, and I dropped my... He was shot down, the leader was shot down. I went in next, and somehow I got over the ship. There were 109s waiting the other side, and I avoided them somehow and came back to England, a very shaken man. I'll show you a picture of how we flew. I think I've got it here. Here's a picture taken by the third aircraft. There's the ship, and there are the flagships, and they're hitting the water in front of me. That's the height we're going in at, that ship, you see. You can see we're not very far off the water. And you went at the ship, pulled up over the top, down the other side, and weaved away. And these people were firing at you the whole time. That was a very frightening experience.
And the other two attacks?
The other what?
The other two attacks?
The other two attacks, we lost two or three aircraft on each attack. But I was fortunate enough. I was one of the lucky ones. I wasn't shot down more by luck than judgment.
That one, that photograph you just showed me has Den Helder, 12th of September 1941, written on the back. So it's obviously off the coast of the Netherlands.
That's right, just off the Netherlands, yeah. After that, we were posted to Malta. So the squadron of 12 aircraft flew to Portreath in Cornwall. And from there, we took off singly, flew to the Scilly Islands, and then flew to Gibraltar, which was a hell of a long trip for Blenheim, because you had to fly well out into the Atlantic so that the JU-88 German fighter bombers didn't pick you up from Cherbourg and burst. And fortunately, we all landed safely at Gibraltar, which was a very, very small, it was a racetrack in those days. There wasn't a large thing. So you had to just drop the aircraft right on the edge of the landing area, or you ended up in the sea the other side. But we fortunately all got down there, and we were there for 2 days. Then we flew on to Malta, which was another very long flight of about 7-8 hours. And we all arrived at Lucca, which was the bomber base there. And I remember getting out of the aircraft distinctly at Lucca and talking to a flight sergeant there. And there wasn't at that moment any bombing. It was quite quiet. And I said, "Oh, we're only out here for 3 weeks, and then we're going back to England." This is what we had been told in England. And we're leaving the previous squadron. And he said, "You see that aircraft coming in there?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "That's all that's left of the last squadron that came out a month ago. And that is a sergeant pilot, and his name is Boom, Ivor Boom. And he today is the distinguished Air Marshal, Sir Ivor Boom. And he was a sergeant pilot. He was the one remainder of the squadron before." Well, we got to Malta. We started bombing Sicily, the Carter, was one of our main targets, and the main part of Italy, and doing low levels on ships. And again, out of our 12 aircraft, we lost 6 in the